Well, we're back, and St. Augustine is the subject of travel journalist Stephanie Moreland's article entitled A European Travel Experience in Florida. Hi, Stephanie.
Hello, Roy. How are you today?
Great. We're a little bit late getting to you because Suzanne was just arriving from Jordan, so it took her a little while to get off the airplane.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
So. What a great article. As I was reading through it, I got a whole history lesson, and that was wonderful. And as you know, although I've had invitations, I've never had the opportunity to get over to St. Augustine, and I hope they're listening to us, because I would like to do that, and especially after reading your article. So you were saying there are a lot of things that you didn't know about St. Augustine, and certainly I don't know anything. I do now.
There was a lot about St. Augustine that I did not know, yes.
Except you knew how to find it on a map.
Yes, I knew where it was on a map, which actually maybe I ought to share with people where it's located for those listeners that don't know. It's actually on the northeast coast of Florida. And it's actually in a very prime location because it's about 45 minutes from Daytona Beach and only an hour and a half from Orlando. And it's very close to Jacksonville. It's about 35 miles south of Jacksonville, too. So it's an easy place to get to in Florida. And I think there's maybe still a lot of Floridians that haven't gone, and especially people outside of Florida maybe don't know that much about St. Augustine.
And for one thing, that it's the oldest city in America, as you
yes.
say.
And many don't know that. It's termed the oldest city because it's the oldest and continually occupied European settlement. And it was actually founded in 1565. Florida was discovered by Juan Ponce de Leon in 1513, and he claimed it as a property of Spain, and he called it La Florida, which means the land of the flowers. And so then, right after, in 1565, Pedro Menendez de Avilés was the one who landed in St. Augustine and claimed it for Spain. So since that time, it's been a continually occupied European settlement, and it's been successful, although several attempts were made to make it unsuccessful. It still has survived, so much of the history still exists in St. Augustine, and you can still, of course, see some of the older buildings and the older architecture, which makes it such a beautiful, beautiful city to visit.
Well, what's interesting is that I didn't realize that they went through all of these various changes over the years, from the Spanish to the English to the French.
Yes.
I mean, it's
five
just...
Five different flags have flown over St. Augustine.
And
there's a little bit of history. I mean, you know, you can see evidence to all of that when you visit St. Augustine, which is what's so fascinating about it.
And Pedro Menendez is known as the Founding Father, I understand.
Yes, he's known as the Founding Father, and it's... St. Augustine got its name in honor of St. Augustine de Hippo, and August 28th, which is the day that Pedro Menendez actually landed, it was St. Augustine's feast day, so that's how St. Augustine earned its name. And so after that, of course, you know, Pedro Menendez brought about 700 colonists with him, and they continuously just tried to create a settlement that would survive the British, and then survive the pirates, and then survive the British again. And so it's St. Augustine's been through a whole lot and still survived.
And
it really has a fascinating history. There are actually over 60 historic sites and attractions in St. Augustine, so there's plenty of things to do to fill your time.
Right, and who actually named the city after the saint? Was it Admiral Pedro Menendez?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay.
So.
And you say also in your article that it's this nation's oldest and continually occupied European settlement, which is interesting.
Yes, that is very interesting because there, of course, have been other settlements like Jamestown and others, and many of them actually failed, but this one was able to survive. And one of the reasons that it did survive is they built a big fort called Castillo de San Marcos, which is a national monument, which is also the oldest man-made national monument, by the way, in the United States.
Right.
But they began building it in 1672, and it was constructed of something called coquina, which is it's a locally shell rock, and it's very ideal because it doesn't crumble under cannon fire. So I think a lot of their success was because of this fort that they built. There was at one point the British actually, you know, laid siege upon St. Augustine, and all of the colonists actually fled to the fort and stayed there for 50 days and survived. So
now, if we could just stop there for a second, I'd just like to back up a little bit because I think the history of all of this is really quite interesting for our listeners. In your article, you say in 1586, Englishman, of course, Francis Drake burned the town to the ground, and then it was soon rebuilt. And then in 1668, it was nearly destroyed again by John Davis the pirate.
Yes.
And then yet again, by order of Maria of Mariana of Spain, they constructed a new stone fort. Is what you're talking about? Is that Castillo de San Marcos in 1672, which was built out of this Coquina, which is quite popular in Florida. We have beaches here named Coquina, so it's a very popular shell type material.
Yes, and there's a lot of fortified walls and things like that, too. I guess they learned over the years that they were just going to keep getting attacked, so they needed to do something.
So it went on again. In 1702, the English troops, for 50 days, the fort, as you say, was fired on, and they left they burned the rest of the city to the ground,
the
I guess,
They burned the rest of the city. So sadly, the people survived, the fort survived, but the city did not. So as a result, actually in St. Augustine, there are no homes or buildings older than 1702 for that reason, which is very sad. But they still, obviously, they were not quitters, and they just kept at it, and they eventually rebuilt St. Augustine, of course, again.
Right. And so it's gone through some interesting turmoil over the years, and let's move on from there. England divided the territory in two segments. St. Augustine became the new capital of East Florida, as you say.
Yes. And
The England occupation only lasted 21 days.
Yeah, it was 21 years. It was
21 years.
Short
I'm sorry.
Period of time.
Yeah.
And then it was actually transferred back to Spain. Again.
Good Lord.
And then for 37 years that happened, so Spain ruled after that. And eventually, 1821, it was transferred to Spain, from Spain to the United States by the Adams-Onis Treaty.
Well, because then came...
And then
came,
they went through the Seminole Wars after that.
Right. Then, as you say, then came Andrew Jackson, who, ignoring the international border, burned native villages and executed two British subjects. And then captured St. Mark's and Pensacola and finally sorted out in 1821 and when Florida was transferred from Spain to the United States. It's a very, very interesting history.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And then, of course, the Seminole Wars were another turbulent period during the 1830s. And then in 1845, Florida finally became the 27th state of the Union.
Right. Over 200 years, as you say, St. Augustine has endured fire, turmoil, strife, and five different flags, which you can still see today, you say.
Yes, absolutely. And it has a much richer, older history than so many of the cities in the United States, which makes it so unique. It makes it such a unique destination, and the Spanish colonial influence is very evident when you walk through St. Augustine, and you can still see it in the buildings and the architecture and, of course, the history, and there's a lot of storytellers in St. Augustine. So it has a very, obviously, strong European influence that is still evident today. I still have yet to see anything like that anywhere else in the United States.
Well, in fact, you say in your article for a short time, during your visit, you almost forgot that you were in the United States.
Yes, I did.
Now,
it was wonderful. And it was only a four-hour drive for me. So, it's definitely a destination people should take advantage of. It has a little bit of everything. It's not, I mean, I really focused a lot on the history in the article just to give people an understanding of how far back St. Augustine really does go. But it's such a, you know, what I love about Europe the most is, like I say in my article, the blending of the old and the new and the integration of history and culture. And many cities in Europe carry that off so well. And so in St. Augustine, you really get a little bit of everything. You know, you can go and become completely immersed in the history and the culture, but at the same time, it's a very sophisticated city. Of course, I talk in my article about the art scene and the restaurant scene in St. Augustine, and so it's very trendy. There's a lot of upscale, fun places to go and things to do, so you really get a little bit of everything, which is what I have always loved about the places I've been to in Europe.
And you, let's just chat a little bit about Henry Flagler's influence on the architecture.
Henry Flagler was actually he's played a big role in Florida's history, not just St. Augustine's
history.
But he is actually the co-founder of Standard Oil, along with John D. Rockefeller. So he was incredibly wealthy. And during the winter of 1888, he actually visited St. Augustine and fell in love with it. And he recognized it as a potential travel destination. You know, he saw the charm, the history, and everything that it had to offer. But he felt that a lot of the accommodation and the public transportation was inadequate for what he deemed as a big travel destination for people. So he just began to build a series of hotels, humongous, beautiful hotels, and he did a lot for St. Augustine. He did a lot for Miami as well, too. He's called the father of Miami as well, which is another story in itself. But so many of his buildings, his original buildings, are still there, and you can see, go and actually learn a lot about Henry Flagler, because he played a big role in Florida history.
Right, and of course, the Florida East Coast Railway, which he built, went all the way down into Palm Beach in those days. It was the only way you could travel, so he really opened it all up. But what's interesting is that you mentioned that some of the historic buildings that he originally started, for example, Flagler College was formerly the Hotel Ponce de Leon, which was built by him.
And when I saw that college, I really hoped that's where I had gone to school. Kept thinking those students were very lucky to go there. It's so beautiful. It's such a beautiful building.
And
it's incredible.
You mentioned Casa Monica Hotel.
Yes.
Which was
formerly the Cordova Hotel.
Cordova. And then the Leitner Museum.
Yes.
Which was what, the Alcazar Hotel, I guess, at one point.
Yes, that's a must-see.
And then the Memorial Presbyterian Church.
Yes. And that was a memorial to his daughter, actually. And there's so many others. I just included a few. But the architecture in St. Augustine, if nothing else, that's a reason to go. Because the Spanish colonial influence is so strong. And Flagler really knew that. Of course, he knew all about the history of St. Augustine. And I think that influenced the way he designed, the hotels and things that he built as well. So it's very, that's a big theme in St. Augustine.
Let's touch on the art, if you will, because you say there's a lot of the thriving arts community that attracted hundreds of artists.
It was actually at one point the largest art colony in the southern U.S. During the 30s, between 1930 and 1950. And still today, it has a very large arts community. St. Augustine actually has over 25 galleries and studios in the area. Many of them, obviously, shops where you can go and buy artwork.
Right.
And there's over 230 local artists in St. Augustine as well. So it was quite an art mecca at one time, and still is. And just a fabulous place, for people that are art lovers. Definitely a great destination for people who just, even if you spend all of your time doing that, it would take you quite some time to get through 25 galleries.
Right. Now we can go back. Let's just go back to the culinary culture. And you say that that you've had all ethnic groups that pass through there from the Spanish, the Italian, the French, the Greeks, the Germans, the Asians, the Swiss, Southern Florida, your cracker food. That is, obviously what makes a great mix of dining fun.
It's a gastronomic paradise, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
It has everything from, country cooking to award-winning American and international cuisine.
Well, let's mention a couple, if you will.
I'm sorry?
Let's mention a couple of these places, restaurants.
Well, one of the places I visited was the Palm Cafe and Bakery. Oh, and it was just absolutely delicious. Had a very relaxed but very trendy ambiance. And, obviously they had a very small menu, but Chef Aaron Miles, who is kind of a hot new chef, is the chef at the Palm Cafe and Bakery. And, it was just absolutely wonderful. I did go to Kingfish Grill, which is actually has a beautiful view of the Intercoastal Waterway, and it's a big seafood restaurant right on the water. They have outside seating, and we had such a good time. It was just a beautiful atmosphere. The weather was beautiful, and the food is to die for. And I did actually go to Claude's Chocolate. I was able to take a tour, and I saw how they actually make their chocolate. And Claude is a renowned French chef, and he and his wife moved down from France and opened a chocolatier, and just delicious handmade chocolate. We got to sip a little bit of homemade hot chocolate as well, so, and of course I'm a chocolate lover, so I was in heaven. And then we did get to eat at a restaurant called Athena Restaurant, and again, I love Greek food. And they actually, I believe they manufacture their own olive oil as well. And they sell that online, and it's just delicious. So, and that's just a few. I mean, there are so many restaurants. You could eat your way through St. Augustine very easily. And I would have if I could have stayed.
Right. Well, I would have been right alongside, I can tell you. I've certainly enjoyed that. And I'm going to keep this article, so when I do make a trip over there, I'm going to look up some of these places. And then you go on to say that there's lots of hiking, biking, kayaking, sailing, shell collecting, parasailing, fishing, surfing. It's all there.
Oh, yeah. Ecotourism is huge there. There's so much that you could do outdoors, and it's a very temperate city. I don't think people realize that, but it has an average temperature of like 70 degrees throughout the year, and in the summer I think an average high of 81 in July and August. So even to get away from the summer, get a break from the summer Florida heat or wherever else you're from, it's a great place to be outdoors. And it's very near Anastasia Island, and so there's a lot to do, obviously, between those two. There's like 42 miles of, and of course, I'm sorry, near Pontevedra too. And so between those three, there's actually 42 miles of oceanside. So, swimming, surfing, shell collecting, kayaking, like I say in my article, it's all there.
Right.
Everything you can do.
And
great place to go dolphin washing.
Let's just, if we might, just before we go, let's touch on a couple of places to stay, and then maybe we'll go to a website so people can do some research.
Okay. I can tell you the place that I stayed was the Casa de la Paz, which is a bed and breakfast. I highly recommend staying in one of the bed and breakfasts. I had the opportunity to really tour and see a lot of them, and each of the places to stay has a history within itself, all tied to St. Augustine in some way. Of course, many of them are haunted, which is something interesting to know, so that just adds to the fun. They're just beautifully, beautifully decorated and antiques, and the people are so accommodating, and it's so interesting to talk to the owners of these bed and breakfasts because they're so proud of their city and what they have to offer, and they can really tell you a lot about St. Augustine, a lot more than what you would learn just by looking it up, so... I recommend a bed and breakfast.
Okay, and these are all, for those that are listening at home, if you go to Stephanie's article, they're all listed there. And just before we go, let's give some of our listeners some information on how they might find their way there and maybe a couple of the websites that would be helpful for research.
Okay. Actually, down at the very bottom of my article, the official website for the city of St. Augustine is on my article, and also the the best place probably is St. Augustine, Ponte Vedra, and the beaches, Visitors and Convention Bureau. So definitely want to check out that website. And then for places to stay, if they're looking for the bed and breakfast, probably the Inns of Elegance.com is the best website to go to.
Okay, and very, 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 very good article, Stephanie. And
thank you.
I really enjoyed it. And I'm looking forward to visiting there one of these fine days. And once again, there's some great photos if you you care to go to our website, and you can read Stephanie's article in depth. Stephanie, we're going to say bye for now, and hope to be chatting with you again soon. I understand you're off to a wonderful summer adventure through Europe, or in a very short time. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure I'll have lots of stories to tell from that, too.
Well, we certainly look forward to them. Thanks, Steph.
All right. Thanks for having me on the show.
A pleasure. Bye for now.
All right. Bye-bye.